Thanks for tuning in this morning and listening to Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. What a beautifully kind of overcast day we're having. You know, every day is a good day. I have a friend who says, well, it's a good day if I wake up on the right side of the grass. You know what I mean? And I do know what he means. Well, we're going to have an interesting show today. I have a question for you. Do you have good money behavior? Do you have not so good money behavior? Another question. Ever wonder what psychological factors influence your money decisions? Well, Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute will discuss this subject with us, the psychology of money. Also, what about your job? Do you hate your job? Does your job hate you? Are you making a transition in your job, either voluntarily or not? We can talk about that as well, because Dr. Deborah Osgood coaches people on that very subject. That's our subjects today, right here on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. Be back after a few commercial messages on AM 610 in Manchester and on the Seacoast, 96.7 FM.
Donald Trump, and you're listening to Mark Hebert's Money Sense. And I like Mark because he just said very nice things about me.
Now, I know you don't know this, Jeremy, but this was the music that we originally used to start the show over 23 years ago when it was the Real Estate and Financial Planning Show. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing this morning?
Very well. Very well.
Excellent.
Very good.
I'm glad to hear it.
And I can probably just assume it was because, you know, money, you know, the financial morning show and this song's about money.
Yeah.
Pink Floyd.
Yeah, we couldn't have been any more original than that. You know,
we could
have
done AC/DC's Money Talks.
Yeah, we could. And you know what walks. You'll have to think about that one.
I don't know.
Give that some thought. While you sit there and wait for our phone callers at 645-6161. Well, we're going to have an interesting show today with Dr. Deborah Osgood. But first, this past week's economic news for you folks out there listening this morning. The number of people filing for unemployment benefits did surge. Ooh, that's not good. To 62,000 to 298,000 for the week ending September 2nd. That was the highest level since the spring of 2015. Don't know if that's a blip or a trend. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. The four-week moving average, which is less volatile, increased by 13,000 to 250,250. The number of people continuing to collect jobless benefits did fall, though, by 5,000 to 1.94 million in the week ending August 26th. The Labor Department's Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, wow, otherwise known as the JOLTS report, showed that job openings edged up to 6.17 million in July from 6.12 million in June. The number of people hired rose to 5.5 million from 5.43 million. The hiring rate rose to 3.8% from 3.7%. The quits rate, which shows the willingness of workers to leave their jobs, increased to 2.2% in July from 2.1% in June. Producer price index was up. It rose only 0.2% in August. Excluding the volatile categories of food, energy, and trade, the core gauge of producer prices was also up 0.2% in August. I guess everything was up 0.2% in August, whether you liked it or not. Overall, producer prices increased 2.4% over the past 12 months. The core gauge is also up 1.9%. over the past year. Stock market's on a tear with the S&P 500 closing at 2,500.23. I think that's a record. 38 points on the S&P, 1.58% increase. NASDAQ closed at 64.48.47. That was up 88 points, 1.39% increase for the week. The Dow Jones saw a 2.16% increase this week, closing at 22.268.34. Russell 2000 was also up 2.31% this week, closing at 14.31.71. International stocks were up 0.81% for the week. And 10-year bond, oh, I have it at 2,202% on my, that wouldn't be good, on my paper here. Well, extra typing this morning before I had my coffee, I guess. 2.20%, I believe, is the close on the 10-year bond. 30-year bond is 2.77%. And oil futures are up $49.83, up 2.27% for the week. For the year, S&P's up 11.68, NASDAQ's up almost 20% for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 12. Small cap stocks up 5.5. International stocks up 18. Oil futures down 7.53% for the year. All right, Mark, circle that number, bring it home, and fix it later. All right, we're going to have an interesting show today. Dr. Deborah Osgood is with the Knowledge Institute. I believe she's in Exeter, New Hampshire, and we have a couple of subjects to go over. The first one is the psychology of money. Not only the psychology of money in general, but the psychology of money for men and women, which can be a little bit different. And we'll spend some time, probably in the second hour, talking about some of the core work that Dr. Deborah Osgood does in her work, and that is helping people transition in life. Maybe you don't like your job. Maybe you want another one. You just don't know how to go about doing it. You feel stuck. Maybe someone decided they didn't want you having your job anymore, also known as the boss, and you're stuck. How do you make this transition? We'll talk about that as well. And, of course, remind everyone that this is a live show. We're actually in the studio in Manchester, New Hampshire, across from the river in the WGIR AM 610 studios. This is not a tape show. That way you could call us. All right, I'll give you the number. 645-6161. That's the number. You can call us, either go on air, talk with us directly, or give your information to Jeremy, our famous and talented producer. Yay! And he will relay it to us. 645-6161 is our telephone number this morning on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. Be back in a few moments. You can hear us a number of different places, anywhere in the world on WGIRAM.com or iHeartRadio, where you have an internet connection in a computer or an i-something that you can put it through, or pick up the phone. Remember that one? 645-6161. That's how you can hear us talk back to you or with you when you call, or on air at AM 610 WGIR or 96.7 on the Seacoast. As a person who slept in late. I just realized that. Hey, welcome in everybody to the Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. Having fun on another Saturday morning. Over 23 years of programming, working on my 24th year, going for 25. Ah, what the heck, I'll go for 30. Dr. Deborah Osgood is in studio. Always fun when Dr. Deb is on. Has some very insightful information for people. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
Nice to be here. Yes.
Yeah. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah. We always do have fun when you're on. And this subject is a really interesting subject to me because it's what I've done for the last 36 plus years. And it's working with people and trying to work with them to get them to either change behaviors, enhance behaviors, or do things that are, in the end, will be better for them financially speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been easy all the time.
No.
It hasn't been easy.
Did they have a therapy class or a counseling class as part of your training?
They do not. That's not a service that we offer. I'm not sure whether we should offer it.
It's a function you have to provide.
It's a function I have to provide, though.
Yeah.
The only problem is my training in that, unlike your training, which was probably very official-like, is experience.
Yeah,
that's
the
my
best
training.
That's mine as well.
Yeah.
And I think Socrates says, unless you do, you don't know. And so when you do, you really learn because you've been there, done that. If it's a theory in a book, you really don't know.
And in business, they say, if you do, do. If you don't, consult.
I think there's something
which
about it,
which is like
too.
Giving us a hard time this morning, isn't it? Well, we do consult. How's that?
Yes.
See, we get out of that one.
Yes.
Yeah. So fundamentally speaking, psychology and money, you know, where did it all begin with people?
Well, money does make the world go round, and so therefore you've got big opinions and a lot of emotional baggage around money. And because money makes the world go round, we all require it. Unless we move to Bitcoin or some other form of currency, I mean, bartering has gained some popularity since the global recession, but still, currency is the foundation of being able to acquire food, shelter, the basics, and then, of course, the luxuries. And so because of that, it's also very correlated to our career, which is very correlated to our purpose. Society then assigns whether you're successful or not, usually by the size of your income.
Huh. But then a lot of people don't want to disclose their income, though, interestingly enough. Right?
Similar reasons. Although, do I have enough?
Right, right. Although, you know what happens out there, you know, when you look at it from the outside over to the other side, is oftentimes you'll see people who look wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They have the nice car, they have the nice clothes, they take the nice vacations.
They're in debt.
When in fact... they are not wealthy.
Yes.
When I actually take a look at their net worth statement, I go, uh-oh.
Yeah, and then the ones that are wealthy, that are wearing the jeans and the comfortable shirts.
And that happens as well,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can't judge a book by its cover. There we go, another cliche, right?
Yes.
Can't judge a book by its cover in that sense. But internally, within yourself, how you think about money is very different for a lot of different people,
yes,
is what I found.
I think it's just as unique as there are individuals, because as early as we can hear and see, we start to see and hear and experience how people handle money. And it therefore influences us through the rest of our lives. And so early on, if money is the root of all evil, if rich people are greedy, if what do you think I'm made out of money, or it doesn't grow on trees and so forth,
right.
Then you live with those files in your file cabinet, and they will influence how you make decisions.
But it starts very young, doesn't it?
As soon as you can interpret information.
Yes, because I remember we were chatting on Thursday about this, and I mentioned one of my first sort of thoughts about money, impressions about money, was the ice cream truck would come down the street in West Manchester, New Hampshire. I grew up and I would say, oh, can I have some money for an ice cream? And I have to think back. I says sometimes it was dad, sometimes it was mom, but most times they would give us money for ice cream.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I guess my very first recollection about money was I didn't get denied anything until I got a little older, though. And then mm-hmm. And then it was like, well, go make your own.
That for me was the fifth grade when I had a paper route.
I had a paper out as well.
Yes.
The union leader.
Ah.
Now I write an article for the Sunday News.
And
they don't pay me, so I don't know. I got paid more when I was delivering it.
In New Hampshire as well, just to clarify for our listeners, the hill is uphill both ways.
Yes.
When you're delivering papers in the winter,
yeah.
In the morning.
In the morning, it is. Well, I had a Schwinn bicycle. I don't know if anybody remembers those, with the curved handlebars, and it was a 5-speed stick shift
one.
In the middle. And you put this big union leader bag on the front and full of papers, and I even went out in the middle of winter in my bike. That was a little more difficult, as I recall, but that was a good lesson.
Yes,
though.
Yes,
that was a good lesson.
And you had to. My dad made us figure out: are you earning? How much are you earning? What's your profit? It was 90 cents a week back then to get the paper. And there'd be one woman on the route that would give me 90 cents, nine dimes. That 10 cents when they gave you the dollar was your tip.
Right.
But she would give me 90 cents.
Yes.
And then we'd come home and my dad would go through all the money and he would accuse us every time of spending our profits on pogey bait. That's the term he used.
Oh.
Yes.
The 10 cents.
Yes.
Figured she gave you
right.
10. Yeah, I know. It was really amazing because you're right. Some people were better tippers. Some people weren't as mm-hmm. good. I tended to get a lot of tips, but then I tended to stop and chat a lot.
What?
Me talk a lot? Come on, give me a break. 645-6161. If you want to share with us your first recollection of money and how it might have influenced you. But one of the things that I remember doing back during that paper route is I was planning out my whole financial life. And I was older than 5 years old at the time, but I was planning out my financial life. And I had planned on being a millionaire. As I always said, I was going to be a millionaire by age 45. I did not make my goal, by the way. And the reason I did not make my goal is I didn't plan on having children in my childhood dream of becoming a millionaire.
That can be an expense.
Right. Ultimately made it, which is good, but it wasn't at age 45, interestingly enough. You know, but it was a main motivator of mine.
Mm-hmm. And now you're rich in more ways than just money.
I hope so.
Hopefully,
for sure.
Right.
Well, my wife, the lovely bride Marie, tends to think so, which is a good thing. But money behaviors, I think, came out of how you saw it. Right. You mentioned something about the ice cream truck and the little girl.
Oh, in our earlier program,
right.
Yes, because when she asked for the money, her mom said, go see your father.
Right.
So her early impression was that the men always had the money.
Right.
And that ruled her until she got married and her husband, and she would fight about money because she just believed he was made of it and she should give it to him.
Yeah. Isn't that awful?
Or he should give it to her, rather.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Every time she went shopping.
The other recollection about money that I had is mom dealt with this. Dad would get the paycheck, come home, and it would get cashed. And we had an envelope system in the house. And there was envelope for the milkman, and there was actually my father was a milkman. I know that's a joke, but my father, when I was born, was a milkman, by the way. It was a joke back then. Whatever. 645-6161. Help me before I get too deep in this one. But the envelope system, in my mind, was important. What I took away from that, it was important, the budget, and it was important to make sure that you didn't spend money that you didn't have. So, you know, Mom,
lessons.
Thank you so much, because that was a really, really good lesson. And I don't know whether she did it intentionally or whether she did it out of necessity.
Built a system that worked.
Right.
You know, the other thing you touched upon, too, is you had a goal early on. So how were you, or your earliest recollection of how did you come to have goals early on? Because that really is important for anyone who's listening today, is your goal. Start with your goal about what you want to earn.
But I've always set goals, and that was just...
It was who you were?
It's who I was.
Right? Okay.
Always set goals. Still do. But goals, and I talk about goals with clients as being extremely important, right? So clients come to us to help us manage their money, and they say, well, I said, so what's the goal with the management of your money here? Well, make more of it. Make it as much as you can.
They tend
That's
not to
not
quantify.
That's
yes.
not a goal, right? That's not a goal. And the problem with that one is what's it aligned to? I can make as much as I can for you, but you have to be willing to not touch it for 20 years.
We see the same in entrepreneurship. When people plan how they're going to succeed in business, the goal has to be quantifiable and measurable. But most people, and this comes back to the theme when it comes to money, are emotional about it. They want to make more money, like you said, or they want to have a business that makes them happy. But no, to really have tangible goals that you can achieve, they need to be quantifiable and measurable.
I talk about going to parties and meeting people. And oftentimes people, and what does everybody ask, right? So
what
you
do
go
you do
somewhere,
for a living?
Yeah, what do you do, right?
Yes.
And my stock answer to that when someone says, Mark, what do you do? Nice to meet you. What do? I usually say as little as possible. But I never get away with that one. Then I get back. What do you really do? Right? And I say, well, I'm a wealth manager and a financial planner and a wealth manager. And then the next question is, oh, if I had some extra money, where should I invest it? And my response usually is, I don't know.
Without a bigger picture.
And I get funny looks, right? What do you mean you don't know? Don't you know exactly where your money ought to go to make more money? I says, well, you know, the answer to that question depends on a number of different things. So if you said to me, where's the best place to put my money because I want to save for a down payment on a vacation home in a year?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that is very different then where should I put my money if I want to retire 20 years from now? It's all goal-oriented.
Exactly. And we have a whole approach called the Eusykian approach to goal setting. And the reason we have this, it's actually a Maslow concept. Mm-hmm. Remember Maslow's hierarchy
sure.
of needs?
Sure.
Well, he created this island of Eusykia. And it was all self-actualized individuals who come to this island, and when they set their goals, they think without limits. I mean, the sky isn't the limit today with technology and the internet and everything else. The universe really is, particularly when we get off on quantum physics, as we were talking about before. But when you set goals, you want to really begin without any limits and be ideal. Set your biggest goal. Think big, they say. Then the next step is to now then, with your goals, as ideal as they can be, start to identify what the fixed variables are, the things you can't change, and then what you can change. And often when it comes to money, particularly in business, people think, I don't have enough money. It's never about not having enough money. You can always change that. The fixed things are, I want to be an opera singer, but you know I'm 70 years old and I've never sang. That could be a problem if that's your goal. You know, maybe instead work at the opera house if you really like opera.
Right.
But when you work then with the fixed and the variables, and you really then become honest about what really can't be changed and what can, you then start with an optimum goal, and you can really then have a whole new approach about what your financial future can be, as well as your career, both topics we're talking about today. But the key, as you've been touching upon, you've got to have a goal.
Very important. And we're going to take a break. And one of the things that I think about when you say that, you know, the sky's the limit, the universe is the limit, is some people have the fear of failure. And that stops them from
many
getting
do.
It.
Many do. That's
talk
a
about
great
that.
One to talk,
want to talk about that a little bit when we get back. 645-6161 is our telephone number on Mark Hebert's Money Sense this morning. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute. We're talking about the psychology of money. So if you have a question or a comment, get online during break. We'll pick up with you when we come back. 645-6161, Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and on the Seacoast, 96.7 FM. All right, don't let us psych you out this morning. Pick up the phone, 645-6161. Dr. Deb, you put up with me, don't you? 645-6161 is our telephone number on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. We are a live interactive program, but the interactive part happens when you call us and we chat about a comment that you might have or a question that you might have. So maybe you would like to share some of your money behaviors that came out of being young, both good and bad. Maybe you have some money behaviors that aren't so good, and you'd like to get some tips on how to change that behavior. All right. But before we do that, we were talking about setting your goals, setting, you know, the sky's the limit when you set your goals. But as you were saying that, Dr. Deb, I was thinking a lot of people are fearful that if they set their goal and they tell everyone that they've set their goal, well, which is another thing, right? So if you set a goal and you don't tell someone else.
Yes.
I'm not sure it's really a goal, by the way, right?
You've got to make
because
it real.
You can retract it in your mind and nobody knows. But if you tell someone else, then I've heard people say, well, you know, that's really fearful to do that because what if I fail? I'll look like a dummy or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you were saying the fear of failure, and yet we really, in our work, address the fear of success more.
Yeah, which I find interesting that
yes.
you're looking at it from the other side of the fence.
There's a lot of company when you're not doing well. Everybody gets together, woe is me, and they share stories, and it's easy. When you succeed, as we were touching upon briefly, there's a lot more responsibility and there's a lot more visibility. And there's a lot more risk of returning maybe to where you were before.
Huh.
So fear of success is really something that needs to be challenged when we work with individuals.
But if you talk to somebody, right, and you say, hey, wouldn't it be great if you were really successful at what you did? Who's going to say no to that?
Superficially, right. That looks fine.
Yeah.
But what does it really take?
So what does it really take?
Right. Well, it all depends on your goal. And so let's come up with a goal. I mean, our listeners today, it would be interesting to get their opinion, too, on whether they say they're afraid of failure or whether they're afraid of success.
645-6161 if you'd like to chime in.
But with fear of success is what we mostly see is people just are concerned about taking the risk because the visibility of having more and then losing more becomes more frightening than just being comfortable with what is.
Isn't that interesting? So the status quo, no matter how bad it is for some people, is better than the unknown.
It's familiar, yes.
Oh, yeah. So how do you break that chain?
You have to find out. We have one of our questions in our initial consultation is what five reasons do you have that really motivate you, that really give you the desire, that really are the basis for why you want to succeed? And you have to write them down. Everything in our work is all about making the intangible tangible, because it's our thoughts and our feelings about money that we have to challenge here. And as long as we don't convert them into something we can see, they're elusive, and so, we can't put our finger on them.
So five reasons why you want to become
successful. Exactly, and write them down.
Hold that thought, because we have a caller. 645-6161. I'm Mark Ebert's Money Sense with special guest Dr. Deborah Osgood from the Knowledge Institute. We're talking about the psychology of money. We're talking about transitions in life, job to job, career, different career. That's our subject this morning on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. And you can call us, go on air, or give your information to Jeremy. He'll relay it to us. The number is 645-6161. I do believe we have a caller.
Yes, we have.
I don't know what Marie put in my coffee this morning.
Maybe some Jack Daniels.
Dr. Deb noticed that. Yeah. Jack Daniels would get me to calm down a little.
Oh, that's the opposite effect.
Unless.
Let's hope nothing's in Fred's coffee from Newbury.
All right. Fred, good morning.
Hey, I got a question for you. This question is a question that's really weird because I'm fascinated by money, which means U.S. currency. I checked with the Treasury, and they said that 77% of all U.S. notes, that's U.S. currency, is in $100 bills. There's 11 billion $100 bills in circulation.
77% is in $100 bills. That's interesting.
My first question is why? That's my first question. 11 billion $100 bills in circulation. 77% of all U.S. currency is in $100 bills.
Huh.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know why.
Why?
Because it's easier to carry.
No.
I just Googled it.
Easier to hide?
Wait a minute. You can't carry 100 billion. There's 100 billion in circulation. That means there's 100 billion notes out there floating around somewhere.
But, Fred, I'm not alone. There's 300 and something million of us around.
Yeah, but that's not us. Most of the money is in overseas banks.
Okay.
And so there's a good reason why.
Okay.
And you said you don't know what the reason is.
Do you?
Well, this is my reason, and I'm going to ask you if it's logical.
Okay.
First of all, U.S. currency is hard currency. That's the number one reason.
Right.
Okay. And the second reason, it's an excellent store of value. In other words, if you had $100 in lira, you'd take that $100 worth of lira, convert it into $100 bills, and if the lira lost value, you wouldn't lose any value.
That's true, but if the dollar went down against the lira, you would use
value. Yeah, but the dollar isn't as volatile as the lira. The dollar is the least volatile currency on the market.
Right. Yep. Yep. Oh, well, I mean, you're right about that, right?
Searching it up here, it even said back that 80% were in $100 bills, and it says it has something to do with inflation. There's nothing like doing some research here on the radio.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yep, inflation and a lot of spending, a lot of time is outside of the U.S., so,
well, I mean, the U.S. dollar is the world currency, right? You know, I'm sure China would like to have their yuan become the world currency, and the euro would like to be the world currency. But it is the U.S. dollar; it's the strongest of all of the currencies out there.
Okay, so you would say that the main reason is because it's a good store of value; it doesn't lose its value as quickly as other currencies.
Well, again, it could, but remember, this is a perception thing. Right? This is faith. Right. Yeah, so we touched upon this earlier when we started out here. So Dr. Deb mentioned we used to be on a bartering system. So why did we go to money? Well, if what you had to borrow was a bunch of cows, it's hard to walk around with a bunch of cows until you find something to barter with.
But we all know that money is nothing but faith. Currency is faith. That's the only way it can work.
Correct.
If you don't have faith in it, it won't work. So,
right.
So that's no news.
Right.
It's faith, period.
Right. I mean, remember years ago we were on the gold standard, right? So for whatever reason, gold was more important than the almighty dollar. And then Nixon took us off the gold standard.
Yeah, Nixon took us off the gold standard. Right. Yeah. Right.
You know.
But anyway, so.
But who's to say gold is any better than the dollar? Right. So oftentimes people say, come to me as a financial advisor, say, well, should I buy gold? And should I put it in a safety deposit box? I said, well, knock yourself out if you want to do that. But who's to say in the end, if we had a catastrophic world event, that piece of precious metal would have any worth to it? I have a greenhouse. Year-round, I can pick cucumbers. I can pick tomatoes. If you're hungry and you got gold, I got to tell you, if I'm hungry and I got gold, I'd rather have a tomato.
Yeah, the other interesting about
although
gold
I would need a gun at that point in time because I'd have to protect my tomatoes.
The other interesting thing about gold is there isn't a bank around that deals over-the-counter in gold.
No. Well,
right?
it's not there anymore, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you go in with a $50 gold piece or whatever they call it and want some gold back, they'll say goodbye.
Right.
We don't deal in gold.
So
there's
a psychological reason why someone would come to me and say, hey, Mark, should I buy gold?
Exactly.
Gold is a fear asset. Is what gold is. People buy gold when they fear something happened to the currency that they are starting to lose faith in, or they might lose faith in.
How liquid is gold? Tell me how liquid gold is.
Hey, if you lose faith in the U.S. dollar, how liquid is that? It's as liquid as anybody else wants it to be.
Yeah, but you can't go change it. You can't go change it. You're not going to barter in gold. You're going to want the currency to do it. So I'm not going to go down to the street with a quarter ounce of gold
or
10,000 of gold.
Right.
I can't do it. It's just not going to work.
So, Fred, what's your you opened up your comments with you're fascinated about money. What's your early recollection about money?
My early recollection about money? Let's see. I think I was 10 years old. No, I tell you, yeah, 10 years old. Yeah, I was 10 years old. I used to get 55 cents for taking a bus to school and then buying lunch and then having a Coke and then having a Coke on the way home and then another nickel to get on the bus. And then I found a kid at school and he didn't like his sandwich. So I said, hey, you don't like your sandwich, I'll eat it. And so I would eat his sandwich and then I saved all his coins up and I hid him in the house. And my mother found him and took him away from me. I realized the value of money.
Very, very good. Wow, that's a great story. I'm so glad you called in.
Thanks for your call this morning, Fred. We really appreciate it. So what does that tell you?
That's a powerful impression. I mean, again, like you said early on, you set goals. It just came natural to you. I mean, I'd still challenge that. There had to be some influence that you might not be totally conscious about.
Right.
Because that kind of goal setting really comes from some kind of influence. The same with Fred. I mean, at 10, to put the money away, when he was getting those 55 cents, he saw how important it was in using it himself that early on. And if he could leverage it, he'd have more. So that was a great lesson for him to learn early on.
Well, I mean, the reason I think I started setting goals was because the goals weren't being set around me.
That could be an influence, yes. And so you saw the difference between the value of having them and not.
Right.
Yes.
And I also saw the differences amongst different relatives. So I had an uncle who was very good at setting goals. He ended up being the wealthiest one of that generation, and I saw that.
There you go. So there's your influence.
Right.
You're right.
Yeah.
And then it became a good asset for you as you went forward and now actually helped
other
people.
Well, he would encourage me is what he did as well, right?
It's a mentor.
So
some
mentoring is very interesting when it comes to that. So, but really, the psychology of how you deal with money oftentimes, and I would suspect more times than not, is born from the people you associate with and see when you're young.
Exactly, your early impressions.
Right.
And in studying, there's a lot more studies today in brain science. The brain actually has the fight or flight instinctive level. Then above that is the emotional, then the intellectual. And today they're actually understanding there's even the intuitive brain. And they're proving that like our first impressions are usually right on in our gut feel. But when it comes to managing money, the emotional trigger, they do these MFRIs and they're able to measure how the brain responds to stimulus. And the emotional brain responds almost immediately, and yet the intellectual brain is a lot after. It takes a lot more time for that to kick in, and it requires a choice. So emotionally, the early influences of money leave a bigger impression. We remember emotions. They become memories more than we do what was that science test we took in the fifth grade.
Sure. So let's shift back a little bit to the subject of fear of success, because I'm not sure we covered that as much as we should before we got a phone call, which is okay. You can call us. You can interrupt us. Our listeners have the power to interrupt at 645-6161, Mark Hebert's Money Sense, with special guest Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute this morning. We do have time before we have to go the news at the top of the hour to grab a phone call or two. So if you are out there listening, feel free to do so. So you were talking about fear of success, and I had coined it the fear of failure, and you've turned the coin around on me and said, well, no, people are more fearful of being successful. And the main reasons that I'm hearing you say are because success comes with responsibility, right?
And
the other one, which is interesting, is success comes with putting yourself out there and being seen.
There's more at stake.
That's interesting. Right. So let's cover the responsibility part first a little bit.
So even back up further, what defines success?
OK.
I mean, that's what I'd love to challenge. But because we're on a show about money, we're considering money in some level, in some regard, defines success. And it's required in order to buy food and shelter and so forth.
Not everyone defines having more money as being successful.
That's correct.
Right?
Sometimes yeah, so that's what I was challenging.
It's having more time. Sometimes it's
time with family,
right? It could mean a lot of different things.
Sometimes quality of life.
Quality of life, more choices in life, right?
Exactly.
But I got to tell you, you mentioned Maslow.
Yes.
The hierarchy of needs. I think that depends on where you are on that spectrum.
Very, very much so. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So if you take the lower end of the financial spectrum, the hierarchy of needs plays a big role in that person's life and will probably take most of their waking hours to deal with.
And if you are at that lower level, that's where I love working with a lot of at-risk youth, because they're typically at Maslow's lowest level in survival. And often at-risk youth, these middle school and high school age kids, are there because of no choice of their own. And so the downside is that they believe this is how the world works. This is their only way of seeing, hearing, and experiencing the world since they've been born. So they have a very limited view of anything else. So when we work with them and we can challenge them to introduce a whole different perspective, you have a population that is naturally resourceful, that has naturally survived under intense odds that many people would shrivel under. And so I have found that working with them, when you show them a new world out there, you then help them to understand what their natural strengths are. You then get the other side of the coin of resourcefulness is innovativeness. And these people then become very proactive, and there are a lot of resources out there then to help them. They get excited about their strengths, excited about their ideas, and they move on.
645-6161 is our telephone number on Mark Hebert's Money Sense this morning with Dr. Deborah Osgood from the Knowledge Institute. We do have a call. Jeremy, who's on the line.
I didn't catch where she was from, but we have D on line one.
D or B?
No, D. D-E-E.
D-E-E. Hey, D, how are you this morning?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Great. I'm calling because, first of all, I do know Deb. Hi, Deb.
Hi,
D.
Good, thank you.
Hi, good. Thank you for being on the radio again. I've heard you before, and I did get a message that you're going to be on today. So I have a question for you.
Great.
As you know, I have created a marketable product, a jewelry product, that does suit all ages. My question to you especially is, how do I keep my enthusiasm going and continuing moving forward when I really don't have the business side of the brain to help me grow? And as you know, I do have a business partner, but life does get in the way. So I need to keep my enthusiasm going. And I get on fire when I get a paycheck. And but once in a while, I just kind of slack off and do other things, which I need to do and also want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I keep that enthusiasm going?
That's a fabulous question.
Keep it on fire.
Yes.
So I don't know if you want me to hang up and listen to your answer or stay on.
And you have 2 minutes to help Dee before we got to go to the news at the top of the hour.
Well,
but we can go over if we have to.
Continue it after the break.
Right,
sure. Dee, that's a great question. And you almost touched on it as you asked the question. What makes you excited? You do like that one paycheck. But when you follow the money, people tend to definitely waver in terms of their excitement. Money is, it helps to achieve things. But what really makes you passionate? Is it your designs? Is it your product? Is it the people when you're out marketing them? That's where you want to hit the nail on the head and make sure that the money never becomes over dominating that type of passion. As long as you're doing what you love, the money will come. But don't, if you're just doing it for the money, that's where your enthusiasm can definitely start to wane.
I understand, and that's mainly what I gather, because I love what I've created. I just don't love creating it and making it over and over and doing the business part of it. As you know, I'm a painter, and I love painting. However, that doesn't bring in consistent bread and butter money to keep my life going. So
but don't dismiss it for that reason. There's a way you're challenging exactly what excites you. If you don't want to make it routine, right, that's mass production, and that isn't exciting. So you want to find a way to delegate the areas of your business that don't bring you joy. And if painting really is your passion and you're only doing this for the income, that has to be challenged. There's got to be a way to bring them both in.
Okay. And that's what I got to work on. Is there any books that you recommend or an avenue for me to find that enthusiasm?
Well, remember when you and I worked together, we spent 2 hours and we answered a few questions in the beginning that really clicked about what excites you and what doesn't?
Yes.
We go back to those materials, and I sent you that information. So we want to go back.
You did.
Yep. We want to go back and read those materials, and then that is going to help guide you. And then you want to talk with someone in marketing where we can align what you're doing for painting in a way where it's remarketed, it differentiates you, and it achieves your income objectives.
Thank you, Dee, for your call. That's all the time we have. We really appreciate hearing from you this morning. We're going to take a break, go to news at the top of the hour, but when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion about the fear of success. We're going to talk more about the psychology of money, and we'll leave the phone lines open for your calls at 645-6161, 645-6161. Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute is my guest this morning. She's in Exeter, New Hampshire, and as you can tell, she's a good coach, and she helps coaching people with transitions and things that they're doing when it comes to their businesses. And we are also talking about the psychology of money this morning. So we'll be back in a few minutes here on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. You can hear us on iHeartRadio, WGIRAM.com, AM 610 in Manchester, and 96.7 FM. Thank you for joining us in the second hour of the program. Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM on the Seacoast. Producing this show every Saturday from 9 to 11 for over 23 years now. I have a very special guest this morning, Dr. Deborah Osgood from the Knowledge Institute, will be joining me in the second hour, and we're going to change focus a little bit to women and money and business. Lots of interesting things going on there. We'll talk about when we come back. Also, a reminder that the phone lines are still open. We did get a few calls in the first hour, pretty good calls. Hopefully, we can hear from you. 645-6161 is our telephone number. You are listening to Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM.
I'm Donald Trump, and you're listening to Mark Hebert's Money Sense. And I like Mark because he just said very nice things about me.
So Dr. Deb during the break was asking me if I needed another cup of coffee to keep it going. Nah, I got Jeremy's music choices to keep it going. Yeah. 645-6161. Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute is my guest this morning on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. Welcome back, Dr. Deb.
Hi, Mark.
One cup a day, that's all I need. Although I'll go for more hugs than that. Usually from Marie, but other people too, which is kind of nice. So I teased women, money, and business. A while back, I did a show with Vicki Warad. She's one of our certified public accountants and certified financial planners at the Harbor Group, and we talked about women and their finances. And there were a lot of differences in between women and men and their finances. One of them in particular is that when it comes to women and money, they're most likely to leave the job force when they first start to build a family and then come back so they get behind. But they also get behind in the sense that they don't add to their Social Security during that time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
They also live longer, interestingly enough. So they need more money for their retirement than a man will need for his retirement, right? Those are a couple of differences. Their investing approach tends to be more conservative. Not always, but tends to be.
It does tend to be.
That builds less money over time is what happens. But some of those things are changing, aren't they?
Yes, they're being challenged, thank goodness. There are some career opportunities where women are having their children but able to then have a daycare center at the office. Some very innovative companies are offering that. A lot of women who work for themselves then can balance having their children as well as earning their income.
Okay.
And then their mindsets about money is kind of interesting because the statistics right now are suggesting that the number of wealthy women in the U.S. is growing twice as fast as the number of wealthy men. And so views about how they handle money is becoming challenged. And I think a lot of that had to do with the glass ceiling. I mean, for years, and having children, of course, is a factor, women have been prohibited from a lot of the senior jobs. And, you know, respectfully, the male used to be the breadwinner, and the woman had to stay home before a lot of innovations. And so we can see why this is the case and the origins of where it came from. But today, that has changed quite a bit. So really paying men or women equally for whatever jobs they're doing, I think, is critical.
Hmm.
In almost half, 44% of the women are the primary breadwinners in their household right now. And since 1960, that's almost a fourfold increase.
But that comes with some challenges, doesn't it? Comes with family challenges. Comes
I was going to say parenting, right. Raising kids. Yeah. Yes. I mean, communities are raising children now. The school system's raising children now. And we weren't really prepared for that. And so we have a lot of challenges as a result of not learning certain basic things like nutrition and you and I having a paper route and how to handle money.
Mm-hmm.
Those things aren't being taught at home.
No.
Communication skills. How about self-discipline? A lot of these things have fallen by the wayside if the school isn't teaching it or the community in some way.
Right, right. So what generation does that affect and what will happen with that generation? Because generations are very interesting, right?
Yeah. They started with the latchkey kids. You know,
right?
They come home to the empty house. And then the millennials. They say when studying generations, the millennials are the first generation that don't trust each other.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Why is that?
I think total chaos. They've been raised in a completely unpredictable environment. I mean, we were at least taught there were certain adult figures that earned respect. I think they've seen in their generation a certain adult figures that do not earn respect across fields where they traditionally did.
Right.
Look at the Catholic Church. Look at politics. Look at what's going on in law enforcement today. I mean, it's like all bets are off when it comes to what certain standards existed in our day and we could rely on.
So if you don't trust anything, what do you rely on?
Themselves.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of concerns that people believe the millennials are the most narcissistic generation.
Oh, boy.
However, I mean, there are always the two sides to every coin.
Right.
They're also being very conscious and aware of what their choices are. And they're very concerned with what some of the baby boomers have left in terms of the financial situation of the world and the environmental situation,
right,
and so forth. And so they're not ready to give up their whole life to have the career and the McMansion, the 2.3 children and the 4-car garage. They want the income and they want the quality of life. And I have to commend them for wanting both.
Although my experience with millennials is that, but on the money end of things, they're happy with a certain amount of money. They don't have to have as much as they can possibly have.
No, they don't want stuff. They can go to IKEA. They don't want the antiques. They don't want the family pass downs. You can rent the jewelry as well as the tux and the gown now.
Except some of them practice YOLO-ing.
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 Oh, okay.
You only live once.
Ah.
Which is a millennial term, and I just learned that a few weeks ago from a millennial. Oh, well.
I'll challenge that one.
A YOLO millennial, right? So
yeah.
A YOLO millennial won't save for the future. A LOL millennial, a YOLO millennial.
Yodelay-hee-hoo.
Yodelay-hee-hoo. That was the first time I heard that term when it came to millennials, and I heard it from one of our millennials in the office.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you run across that one or not.
But. Well, it has pros and cons. I mean, live life to its fullest. I think every day you should be conscious. There's a book, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, that is very, very powerful. We only have today. And if we can be fully conscious of all of our choices today, then the past teaches us things and the future can take care of itself. So it's all about balance.
You took the word right out of my mouth. I was going to say, remember the commercial, the old commercial, where's the beef? Well, I always say, where's the balance in your life, right? And sure, living for today is okay, but what happens if tomorrow shows up?
And you're not prepared.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell people.
With tomorrow in mind and with the lessons of the past learned, that's sort of what I mean by tomorrow takes care of itself, because today you're not, by living today, it doesn't mean that you're reckless. It instead means that you have goals, like we were talking in the first hour, that you know where you want to be going. And so you're fully conscious of your choices and the ramifications of your choices today so that you can get to where you have goals.
Am I hearing you talk about personal responsibility?
Yeah, we touched upon that other word. Self-discipline. I mean, that's another one today that's really old-fashioned.
Yeah. And using common sense. And oftentimes people say, well, common sense isn't as common as you think. So it all comes down to you, doesn't it?
Yes. And I simply say, wake up. Because I believe
you
that...
say, wake up.
We
so
do.
So if you consult with Dr. Deb, expect to be slapped in the face.
Well,
wake up!
Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss, but I find if you follow what really irritates you, you're a lot more motivated.
Well, and you know, Dee had called in about, and that was basically her question, I think.
Yes.
Her issue, right? How do I stay motivated?
Yeah. And
right? I get excited and then I get bored.
Yep. And you touched upon the difference between men and women. Dee asked, she knows she's in some way, she's successful in her business in some way, but she's not happy. And so she's willing to ask the question. Many times men won't. And a lot of middle-aged men who have lost their jobs or really 55, 65 now are being asked to leave their jobs and maybe a handout for retirement, they're not willing to ask for help.
Excuse me, pardon me. I still view that as young personally, by the way.
Okay.
But go ahead. Keep going.
Yes. Did I say older or old?
Yes.
So anyway, the key is when you're in those situations, it's easier for someone on my side of the desk or the coffee table to see. Because when we're in a situation of transition and change, it's harder for us to make decisions. We don't always see what the opportunities are, particularly the older, for lack of a better term, we get, because we have years of looking at things in a certain way. And so it's very valuable to have a coach or an outside perspective from someone you trust to help you become aware and have a paradigm shift of your opportunities. It's a different world. And when you're 55 and 65 and looking at your options, they are very, very different today than they were last century.
Right. So I think I know the answer to my own question here, but why do men keep it in? right?
Oh, that's a big question. There's many, many, many reasons, but men have been taught
to cry.
Exactly, and women have been taught
to cry.
Be nice.
Yes. To be nice.
And to be nice.
It's okay to cry.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, men cannot be weak, and they see, I don't have all the answers as a sign of weakness, but I would say and argue that that's not just male-dominated. I know when I've had my own hardships, it's very hard for me to ask for help.
I have to say is thank God for GPS and men. This is men say thank God for GPS, right?
They don't ask for directions.
Because they don't ask for directions. It used to get lost. At least now they have a chance of figuring out where to go.
Yes.
It's amazing how technology has changed a lot of things, right, when you think about it.
But the man who does ask for directions is often way ahead of his average fellow man.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's leveraging all access of resources without having a problem of what others think, because he's leading life on his own terms.
Right. You know, one of the interesting things that Jack was saying on Thursday, Jack Heath, on the morning news, and I'm changing subjects again, and that is we were talking about people who need to be coached and et cetera, and I've run across a lot of successful people who feel they don't need coaching.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's like admitting you don't know something at a core level.
Right.
And I can understand why they'd feel that way. I mean, I can relate.
But Jack said most of the golf pros have multiple coaches.
Yes.
And they're the best in the
world.
So he made a really interesting point because so I think I'm going to have to go get a coach. I don't know why, but after that comment. But
you mean you have to go get one? Like, what's wrong with this one?
Get one. I have one right in front of me.
Just thought I'd point that
Dr.
out there.
Dr. Deb and I are going to go through a personal session, and you can just listen in, right? You know.
And I won't be asking you how you feel about this.
How do you feel about this, Mark?
No.
Or what are the five things that are most important to you?
Yes, write them down.
Write them down. That's right. But this is important stuff, right?
It is.
And again, I go back to the whole reason I think I asked you to be a guest the first time was because in my practice, I felt like I was being forced into an area that I didn't really want to go.
Understanding human nature.
Right, right. And sometimes I feel like I'm a marriage counselor. Sometimes I feel like I'm a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
right? And
you are.
I guess.
You are. I mean, but your focus is the money piece of it. You know, my focus is
it's not just what you want
out of life.
We say the money, but it's really the goal.
The tool by within which you use to achieve your objectives.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. That's really what it is. And it was a while before I realized that in my career.
Hmm.
Right? So early on, it was all about more money is better. Now it's how do I help somebody balance a certain amount of money with their life
and
their happiness?
What you're speaking to is almost every industry. And if we can understand what motivates us, whether we're in construction, science, financial management, then the rest of it, I argue, is the science. When we work with people in self-employment, we say we work with the self first, because that's unique. That's an art. Each
right.
individual is unique.
Yeah.
Succeeding in employment is a science, whether it's traditional or self-employment or a combination of both. It's about no customers, no business, making more money than you spend, and just doing it, because there's no right or wrong way. It's unique for each individual.
But it's not about more money, is what I found. And the interesting part of that is that, if I talk with a client, maybe they've been with me 10 years, 20 years, 25, 30 years. And I, once in a while, I'll just say, why are you still here? Why are you still a client of mine?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was very young in the career, if you asked me to answer that question for the client, I would have said, because I can make more money than the guy down the street for them. But that's not how they answer the question. What they say is the number one answer to that question usually is, I trust you. The number two answer to that question usually is, and I think this is the most important one, you give me peace of mind. And then the number three answer usually is, I think you're doing a better job than I would do myself.
And isn't that interesting? The first two answers are emotional.
Yeah.
And the third one is about the equation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, emotions first, intellect second.
But it took a while to learn that as a certified financial planner, right? It took a while to figure out, wait a minute, these people are really, why are these? So I'm thinking they're here for one reason, when in fact they were here for other reasons.
If you address the self first, you'll get to the other side of the science. And it's funny, we talked very early in the program today, did they teach you a class in behavior? No. As part of your education, you weren't required to have a class there.
No.
And yet, when you're working with human beings, it really helps when you understand the basic things that motivate us.
So how can somebody who's a professional or in a career work with that and understand that with their customers?
Well, we touched upon, unless you do, you don't know. So if there is someone in a particular career, and again, they span all kinds of different things, particularly today, the more they know themselves, the more they then know their customers and act from there first. That trust piece that you said is so critical. Hmm. I think regardless of millennials and generational issues, there are some basic emotional needs that we all have. We all want to belong. Mm-hmm. We all want to feel safe, which is the trust. And that all comes first before we're into the equation of whatever the industry and the service or the product we're providing.
But then when you go to somebody new to get advice from, whether it's an accountant, a financial planner, a doctor, a psychiatrist, or whatever, right, trust is not instant.
But, you know, it's funny the examples you gave. The most of the way that a person will choose to go to any one of them is that someone they trusted referred them.
So trust is transcended to another person.
They're at least trusted the person who referred them.
Right.
Because you're not going to look typically for those positions, an accountant, a financial advisor, a doctor. You really want someone you trust to at least help you first.
Got it.
Decide whether you want to choose that person.
Right. So because my buddy Frank trusts this person, I
exactly
translate that as to,
yep,
I can trust
that very
person.
Different than where can I go to buy a new suit.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah. But still, although some people, now one of the problems with trust is that, and we talked about it last week in a sense with Barry Glennon, who's the director of the New Hampshire Bureau of Securities Regulations, is that whenever they run across investment fraud, it's usually because someone trusted someone else.
Now you're getting to what Jack and I talked about last week on the show.
Right.
And the whole world right now lives at a level of chaos that we have never seen before.
Okay.
And when you have total chaos like this, it's just like the magician. You know, he pulls the rabbit out of the hat, or he looks like he's cutting the person in half and he isn't. We have no idea what's going on because we're in a constant state of chaos.
And the chaos comes from how fast the world is going and how fast information is traveling,
or
I believe.
Or how effectively those who are using their intellectual brain very effectively in manipulating others through strategic approaches and counting on the emotional reaction of the masses.
So
Machiavellianism.
But you can use that to do good.
Yes.
And you can use that to do bad.
I'm so glad you said that.
On that note,
we all have a choice.
We're going to take a good commercial break for this station because someone paid them to do it, and a bad one for me because I'm not going to be able to continue our conversation until we get it done. So get her done, Jeremy. Take us to break. When we come back, phone lines are still open, everyone. Don't just let Dr. Deb and I chat about this. I want to get off the couch. You jump on for a while. 645-6161. That's our telephone number on Mark Hebert's Money Sense right here on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM.
You'll say we've got nothing in common. No common ground to start from.
It's time for you to jump on the couch. I don't know why I came up with that analogy. I did. Jump on the couch with Dr. Deb. If you are going through a transition in your life, whether it's dealing with money, having emotions about money, and wanting to work some of this through so that you can accomplish the goals that you've set out for yourself, or maybe you haven't set a goal and you need to know how to go about setting one, or maybe you're transitioning in your job. You're working for someone and you don't like it and you would prefer to do something else, including starting your own company. We can talk about that as well. 645-6161 is our telephone number on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute is my guest this morning. And so I have to, I was in a, let's see, we went to a restaurant. It was in Rhode Island. We went to a wedding in Rhode Island. My wife and I and a couple of relatives were there after the wedding. We went to a restaurant and ate. And they brought the bill. And in with the bill was this restaurant card where you can get points for going to restaurants in Rhode Island, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the waiter comes up. Now, the waiter must have some sort of incentive if I signed up, I would suspect, right? Because he said, oh, do you want to sign up for the points thing? I says, well, I probably won't come back to Rhode Island for another 30 years, right? And he turns to me, well, that's okay because the points never expire. And I immediately said, but I will.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And my wife looks at me and goes, how come you're so fast? I don't know. It just comes out. That's why the couch comment.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want to jump on the couch with Dr. Deborah Osgood, you can jump on right now.
And if I can say, you know, there is no couch here.
Okay.
This kind of work is across the desk or the coffee table.
There you go, which is a good. A coffee table's better.
Yeah, and it's not psychoanalysis. It's,
no. No, it's coaching.
Yeah, it's more like, yeah. What do you want?
Yeah.
My job is to ask the right questions.
And hopefully you end up giving yourself the answers that are important to you, right?
Hopefully the individual,
right.
Then it triggers them to come up with the answers that are right for them.
Right. But there's so much stuff. Oftentimes people tell me, well, I don't know what to do. You know, I mean, I try, I fail. And oftentimes they'll blame it on other people. And whenever somebody does that to me, I say, well, I know who to blame it on. Oh, really? Who? I says, do you have a mirror?
Yeah. Who is, wherever you go, who is the same person who's there?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, coming back to what we were saying earlier in the show is the goals. You want to set goals, and you want to be fully conscious when you set them, because most people do not understand what's possible. And so, so much has changed in this century in terms of starting your own business even. Or, as I'm arguing, with 40% of Americans working for themselves, self-employment is the new normal in this economy.
Sure.
And so it isn't about traditional job creation. It's about creating your own job. But most people believe creating your own job means, oh, my goodness, I have to start my own business. It's high risk. It's long hours. Hmm. Well, high risk and long hours is just what happened to, I think you said, 62,298,000 people, which is the highest since 2015, filed for unemployment.
Right.
I mean, so they're now, more and more individuals are facing the need to create their own job. And so I usually work with them to create a whole new view, a paradigm shift, if you will, of what's possible. Last century, we had to be the jack of all trades, master of none, chief bottle washer, chief dishwasher, mm-hmm. whatever we used to say. Today, you can run a whole business with a cell phone. You can have
Absolutely.
A whole customer relationship management on your phone. You can, if you travel and do consulting, you have these options of having virtual offices all over the world where you just land in that city. You have a receptionist. Your name's on the door. They'll answer the phone for you, and you've got high-definition video conferencing. So you don't need to operate like we were taught for those individuals over 40 that really have to face
right.
creating their own job. There are way many more options where they can be successful.
When I was a lot younger, 645-6161, join us. We have about 20 minutes of programming, so join us with your comments or questions this morning with Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute. When I was a lot younger, I was afraid that I would actually have to retire.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Right? Because decades
ago, I feel
the
same way.
Decades ago, what retirement meant, it was all or nothing, right? I either had to be there all the time, in the office, in front of the clients, in my suit, or I'd have to be gone.
Drooling on the porch in the rocking chair.
Oh.
Creates a visual, doesn't it?
Thank you, Dr. Deb. I really appreciate that visual.
Getting you back for the couch.
Yeah, you are. The couch comet. But no more.
Yes.
No more.
That's
right. I don't have to.
You
right?
can have
so
it
I will,
all.
I'll oftentimes be in home, working from home, in my beautiful home, with my beautiful wife upstairs, looking at my beautiful view, and Skyping with a client. Right?
You're actually speaking to the money mindset as well, of the difference between people who have been successful and satisfied with their lives and people who have not. And people who have not think that it's either this or that, that I have to have this, but I can't have that. Well, people who are successful believe they can have both.
Well, and the other part of that equation, interestingly enough, is that I've learned how to delegate. And delegation still comes with responsibility, and the buck ultimately does stop here. But you have to get past the someone else can make a mistake problem.
Yes.
When you delegate, right? And there, it's okay if they make a mistake once. The same mistake.
Once, huh?
Once. We have to learn not one mistake of the same kind.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So we have to learn from our mistakes.
Right.
Although the end result is sometimes their mistake cost me money, but I had to accept that.
Yes, right? But everybody benefits in the long run.
Correct.
And so your point is you don't have to just retire or work.
No.
You can have quality of life, and you can gradually delegate and step back. And
still participate.
Yes.
To the extent I want to participate.
Yes.
Right.
And everybody benefits.
What a great way to do it, though. So how can everybody get there? And maybe they can't get there with every career, although I can't think of many careers where they can't.
No. But it comes right back to the whole premise of this show, the psychology of money, the psychology of success, the psychology of how we think we can succeed, our psychology of what we believe we're worth having or not worth having. And so anybody can get to where they want to go, but they first have to challenge the roots to improve the fruits. The roots are who they are, they are what they early came and saw and heard and experienced, and challenge that, and then you can, the roots you can't see. But the fruits of the tree you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they want the quality of life and experiencing, I forget that term you used, the solo or solio, it sounded like a yolo.
YOLO.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, if they want to fulfill their life on...
You only live once. YOLO,
yeah.
Right.
Isn't a good Bond movie with that name?
I don't know.
You only live twice.
That's the Bond
movie,
that's right.
Yes.
Unless you're a cat, it's 9 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really challenging, really, what's between your ears first will then help you to achieve, I think, your optimum satisfaction in life.
Well, we keep mentioning the word goal. So when I come back from our last break of the day, I want to talk about how important it is not only to set the goal, but also set the structure and the ways
what you do with
on
the goal.
How you're
yes.
going to get
Perfect.
To the goal. All right. Jeremy, would you take us to break, please? Are you ready to answer the phone when someone calls you at 645-6161? Sounds like an inquiry, doesn't it?
It does,
inquisition.
But, yes, I always am.
All right.
Of course.
You heard the voice. That's the man that you will hear when you call 645-6161. When we come back, love to hear from you. Dr. Deborah Osgood is my guest. We're talking about the psychology of money, and we will focus on the big term goal. How do you get there? All right. Be back in a few moments on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. To my lovely bride, if you're listening, I do love you. I think of you every time I hear this song. I love dancing to Marie with this song. And I wish that on everyone, by the way, Dr. Deborah.
Yeah.
I wish that on everyone.
Yep, truly blessed.
Someone that they can share their life with and be happy. And the greatest thing about the kids moving out of the house is I got my girlfriend back.
Yes, very nice.
I got my old buddy. But we do miss the kids. So we have about 10 minutes to go, and the word goal kept coming up in our conversation. 645-6161 is our telephone number if you'd like to discuss this subject with Dr. Deborah Osgood with the Knowledge Institute. They are so important, but you can't just say a goal. So I'll give you an example. People come to me, they go, okay, what are your goals? I want to educate my kids and I want to retire. Two of the most common. All right? And then I ask them, what does that mean? And oftentimes I get, well, I'm not sure. Right? So a goal isn't a goal unless you quantify a goal, in my mind.
100%. I mean, there's Northern Essex Community College and there's Yale. I want to educate my kids.
Right.
You know, there's a big leap there in terms of how much it costs.
Absolutely.
And I retire, right. Do I want to retire in one of those mini houses that these kids think are very interesting today?
Or on the porch drooling in the chair like you got me with, right? Well, yeah, and people say, when you talk about retirement, I say, well, you know, what's the retirement goal? I want to be comfortable.
I
don't know. What's that mean? You know, I go to a Marriott and I sleep in their comfortable sheets. I you know, what does that really mean? They do have comfortable sheets, by the way.
Right.
I believe that's a high thread count. I'm not sure what that actually means, but that's what
I've been
told.
But that word comfortable, you're right. That is a huge warning sign.
Right. Why? So warning sign, that's interesting that you say that.
Yeah, comfortable is safe. And safe, as we were saying, I think, in the break, as human beings, we are a living animal. And just like plants, if we're not growing, we're dying. And so safe and comfortable means really kind of operating on automatic pilot.
So is that like an animal that if they feel threatened, they're going to exhibit certain behavior? Is that what you mean by being safe?
No, definitely not. Safe and comfortable is no risk, no challenge, no changes, status quo.
Inside my box.
Yes. And life isn't that way. I mean, every day something changes. And I find that with my clients, it's so much more exciting when you're the driver of that change versus life controlling you.
Right.
So when someone says comfortable, particularly in my line of work, you know, that just means they don't understand opportunity versus challenge.
Right. So quantifiable. So a goal has to be quantifiable in a sense. So when I deal with it with a client, quantifiable means in these dollars, today's dollars.
Yes.
If you were retired today, how much income after tax would you want to have coming in where you don't have to go to work?
Very good. That's quantifiable.
That's very quantifiable. Yep. I can work with those numbers.
Right.
But that's not necessarily easy to do. Right? Because when people ask me, when am I going to retire? I go, I don't know.
Yeah, again, we have to define retire.
Right. That's correct. You have to define what that means, because a lot of people, one of the components of a retirement plan that we'll oftentimes do is someone will say, you know what? I don't want to do what I'm doing now because there's too much pressure. There's too much stress. I'm not liking it as much as I did a number of years ago. So I would like to get to a point where I know I've got a really good base. I call it a minimum maximum.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What's the minimum retirement level of income you'd like to have, and which one would you really like to have? Minimum, maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get to the minimum, and then now you're free to either change jobs, work part-time, if you want more than the minimum. Or accept the minimum.
Yes.
But you have to be okay with the minimum, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And when you're okay with a minimum, you're really speaking to, where do you live? You know, what is the money going toward? And this is particularly important for individuals, and the older they get, it's very, very difficult for a lot of older people, and studies have proven this, that they are even more change resistant. And so if they're in the house that they raised the five children in, many of them cannot face selling the house.
Sure.
The older they get.
Sure.
So in your minimum and maximum equation, you want them to also define, well, where are you living? And do you own the place you live in, or are you renting? We're having interesting debates now about people who are retiring. I mean, we've been completely told that a house is an asset. in having a mortgage, and it accumulates in value. And so as you pay your mortgage, you're developing an asset in this regard. But there's also the new belief that if you've got a good portfolio, you've achieved your maximum or minimum in your line of work for what you want to retire, and you've got a predictable $1,500 a month rent where you don't have to worry about the mortgage or the taxes or the furnace blowing up or the roof mm-hmm. or the snow plowing, and you know that you just have a fixed cost every month at $1,500, you know, people are starting to weigh that belief when their retirement years about whether they should be in their house and owning it and still having the variables of things breaking down like the furnace and so forth, or in a fixed rental income.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I am seeing some shifts there. I've also seen shifts where people got the big mansion and they had to make a lot of money to support the lifestyle. And one day they woke up and they said, whoa, this isn't working anymore. And they actually sold the big mansion and moved into a much smaller house.
Yes.
It is not
fun.
Where it was paid off.
Yeah, my husband and I, do we want to paint the garage or do we want to go kayaking? And so we downsized with a plastic house. You can hose it off, lock the door, and go kayaking.
Vinyl is final. And this show is final in about 6 or 7 minutes. It's done. It's over until next week. And Dr. Deborah Osgood won't be here next week. Jeff Foy will be. I will be. Dr. Deb will be back someday, though, for sure. But you can call us at 645-6161 with some final thoughts or questions. So very important to quantify the goal. But then when you work with people with the goal, so you said earlier, you know, the sky's the limit. Do you set a sky's the limit goal?
A universe is the limit.
The universe is the limit. That's why you went bigger than the sky.
Exactly.
Well, the universe is
things have changed. You know, like right. We were talking about at the break, quantum leaps. Quantum physics is proving now that even time and space is no longer predictable.
Yeah, but that goal off into the future is so far away. I think what most people don't know how to do is what's the first step that I need to take?
Well, that's where we have this whole time planning and goal setting process. Once you do the Eupsychian process, you come up with your ideal goal. You look at the variable and the fixed factors. You then refine your goal. You then define it for a 3-year. We think 3 years is really about the furthest these days because of the rate of change. There are just too many variables. So you identify this as a 3-year goal. You then split that into what then would you be at in 2 years if you saw yourself achieving 3? And then how would those 2-year goals be achieved now in this next year if you wanted to be there? And now in this year, let's break that down into 12 months. And then you break down the next month into exactly 4 weeks, and you figure out precisely what you want to be doing tomorrow in order to get to where you want to be in 3 years.
Okay. So very concrete way of dealing with a goal.
Simple, yes. Right. The complex part is coming up with it.
Right. Oh, you know, that's fascinating, right? It's true, though.
Yeah.
It's true, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because once you quantify that long-term goal,
we can break it into parts.
I can break it into parts and tell you this is how much you're going to need to save in order to accomplish that goal. And you have to, as you're bringing in an income stream, you have to slice off X amount of that income stream and go put it toward that goal. All right, let's talk about goal number 2, educating your children. All right, let's slice off income for that. One of the problems with having multiple goals that I've seen with clients is that goals are usually chronological in their life.
They change as we get older.
And they also change as you get older.
Yes.
But what happens is one of them is longer in time than another one, usually. So what tends to happen is all the focus and all the energy goes on trying to accomplish the goal nearest to one, sometimes at the cost of the longer one.
That's when someone like you helps to provide the bigger picture.
Right.
Yes.
So you get a young person, right, who's entering in the workforce. They're living in an apartment. They want to have a home. Their main goal is to save as much as they can to get the biggest house they can. I say, no, you should be putting money away in your 401k plan as well. So anyways, just we've covered.
Balance.
So balance. There's the other word. Goals and balance. Those are my 2 takeaways from today. Setting
and
goals
as you and wander on through life, whatever may be your goal, keep your eye upon the donut and not upon the hole.
I'm back on the couch again.
Couldn't help it.
Couldn't help it. Dr. Deborah Osgood, let's talk a little bit about your services, and let's talk about how someone can get a hold of you if they would like to partake in your services.
Sure. The Knowledge Institute for Small Business Development, our website is kisbd.com, or you can reach us at 658-0340. We work with one-on-one, one-on-few in workshops, and one-on-many in public speaking.
And really, when you say we work with, what is the goal when someone comes into your office?
They don't like where they're at.
Yeah.
And they want to get somewhere else.
And they want to get somewhere else. And your job is to help them get there. Help
exactly.
them work it through. Good. And I think that's wonderful. I think that's great. I'd love to do it again sometimes. I love our takeaways, you know, balance
this
in
has
life,
been fun.
Setting some goals. I know I went bing, 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 bing all over the place this morning in our conversation, but it was a good conversation. Certainly want to let everyone know that next week my guest will be Jeff Foy. Jeff Foy is with Foy Insurance. And Jeff is an interesting person. A couple things happen when Jeff is on. Number one, I always learn something new, right, about whether it's car insurance, homeowners, liability insurance. And number two, for whatever reason, I end up buying more insurance from Jeff.
He's good. I actually refer a lot of small business clients to him.
Yeah, he's very good. So, and it's always fun to have Jeff on. And Jeff loves calls from people. And once in a while, he likes talking politics, but that's a whole other scenario. So Jeff will be on next Saturday at 9 a.m. So I want to thank all our callers this morning. Certainly want to thank all our listeners. This show is kind of different when Dr. Deborah Osgood is on. Certainly want to do it again. Hopefully you will join me again
sometime. Yes, thank you for having me.
All right. Jeremy, thanks for producing the program. What did you think of the show this morning?
I think that Dr. Deb's really knowledgeable about her craft, and yeah. So are you. But and when you mix different things, it's interesting.
Yeah. And next time when she's on, should we talk about the psychology of being a new father?
Yeah. Okay. I love that. I'm sure there are probably other fathers
right?
out there
that's
who
right.
need this information.
That's right. Who need that, right? Anyways, thanks, everybody. Appreciate you listening. If you're out there driving, if you're out there out and about, please have a safe weekend, but please enjoy. But be sure to tune in to another edition of Mark Hebert's Money Sense next Saturday from 9 to 11 with Jeff Foy on News Radio 610, 96.7 FM, iHeartRadio, or online at WGIRAM.com.